Jeremy, you when you were first tried to report this story, there were a lot of roadblocks thrown in your way. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, just to list a couple of them. I mean, for one thing, I got banned from Pakistan, and the Pakistani government wouldn't give me a visa for some of the early reporting that I did on this story. And then, as far as the U.S. government was concerned, the first time that I did a story for The Nation magazine about JSOC, I received this call out of the blue on my cell phone the night before the magazine was going to press from a captain in the U.S. military who was the senior aide to the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the senior, you know, military advisor to the President of the United States. And he wouldn't tell me how I got my number, and he said, you know, if you publish this, you're going to be on thin ice, and he wouldn't clarify what he meant by that. My computer got hacked. I mean, you see all of this in the film and other details, but, you know, it's very clear that Rick and I had sort of hit a nerve, and right. A lot of doors were being slammed in our face, and we had to just keep going.
In this movie, you were behind the lines with a Somali warlord, and you were in some pretty tight spots. Did you ever fear for your life when you were making this movie?
Well, you know, I should say, I mean, you know, this happens a lot when the person who's in front of the camera is often looked at as the sort of, you know, the person who was responsible for everything. I mean, what's remarkable to me, I mean, I've worked with Rick for, as I said, more than a decade, and Rick has spent far more time in war zones than I have. And you know, cameramen are killed more often than any other media people. And, you know, there were times in Somalia where Rick would be filming me and someone, and I would see tracer fire hitting a concrete barrier behind Rick. People were trying to shoot Rick in Somalia, and I would see it. And it's this terrifying moment where this person, I mean, Rick and I became like family in the course of doing this. You see him unflinching, taking these photos, and it's like 2 inches above where those bullets are hitting. That hits Rick in the spine, and to me, those were some of the most terrifying things. Watching Rick, I mean, I would be in. You see these shots in our film of the streets of Mogadishu, the most dangerous city in the world. I'm sitting inside of a car that has, you know, armored plating on it. Rick is on the back of a car with Somali militia guys filming out in the open. 2 weeks after we left Somalia from that shoot, a cameraman was killed in the very place where Rick was doing exactly what he was doing. So, you know, and the other thing I'll say about, I mean, so I would say Rick took much bigger risks than me and always has. But the other thing is the local folks that we work with, whether it's in Somalia or Yemen or Afghanistan or Iraq, they take much greater risks, and they represent the vast majority of the journalist deaths in these war zones. It's people whose names you never hear and who are never invited on cable talk shows. Those are the real heroes of our film, and you really don't see them because that's not the kind of people that they are. They're out there working in the trenches every day to make it so that journalists who come from a country where these policy decisions matter can tell those stories. And, I mean, to us, we always say this when we show our film, right at the beginning of the talkback. Mm-hmm. We say, look at the credit roll on this film and all of the names on it, because those are the people that made this film. We're going to get the credit for it, but those are the people that made this film. And we try to be very respectful of everyone who took risks so that we could tell the story. And we stay in touch with them. Great. And they know that this is happening, and they're just excited about the possibility that people in this country will know their story.
In the film, you spoke with an unlikely U.S. ally in Somalia, a warlord, and I wanted to ask you how you first connected with him. But before I get to that, I want to play a clip from the film. In this, he's leading you to the site of fierce fighting.
In an earlier life, Inda Ade had been America's enemy, offering protection to people on the U.S. kill list. But the warlord had since changed sides. He was now on the U.S. payroll and assumed the title of general.
So he's saying that the fiercest fighting that they're doing right now is happening right here.
Okay.
The men fired across the rooftops, but it didn't make sense to me what we were doing here, or what the Americans were doing here, in Somalia, arming this warlord turned general for what seemed like a senseless war.
We gotta move. So these were Shabab fighters you buried here?
Of course.
If you capture a foreigner alive, you execute them on the battlefield?
Rick, I wanted to ask you what your immediate reaction was when you heard that this warlord who cooperates with the United States told you that they execute foreigners on the battlefield if they capture them alive.
We were absolutely stunned. I mean, we were stunned. First, he walked us over to one of these ditches. It's a tunnel that the Shabab dug as a fighting position and showed us, a pile of sand at the bottom. But there are two dead bodies under there, people we just buried here. And the fact is that he was bragging about the fact that they executed on the battlefield. I mean, he was, he goes on to say, we need to show these people no mercy. It was in Somalia, that was Somalia has been turned into a terrifying place by a couple of decades of covert war. And these kinds of characters have become our allies is just absolutely terrifying.